Welcome back again to another season of Teacher Tweaks and Tips. My name is Simona Watts Lacoste, and this podcast is devoted to providing strategies, ideas that educators can employ that will help them be more effective. This very first podcast of the season, our topic is about how online teaching should be different from face-to-face instruction. Now, there are two big components to this. There's the community building and communication component, and then there's the instructional design. Those are the two main categories or areas that your online instruction is going to be different from your virtual or face-to-face teaching. So starting off, the first thing is that for the first few weeks of school, they should be devoted to community building and digital competency. Here in my system, we just finished our first semester and just days ago began our second semester. And one of the things that we are promoting is to build that relationship with our students. I know for me, as well as with a lot of educators across the state and across the nation, when they did go to school with face-to-face, it was difficult to try to learn the students' names even just because you couldn't even see their faces because we're all wearing face masks. But in your digital world, in your virtual classroom, you want to really focus on developing that sense of community because you are in different places. They're not there with you. You have the benefit of Zoom or Google Meet to communicate with your students and see your students, but it's very different from being face to face. So it's exceptionally important to work on building the relationships and learning your students and having them get to know you. So for the first few weeks, just really resist the temptation to dive right into curriculum and at the start of your semester or at the start of the school year. Just really resist doing that and just focus on the community building and making sure that your students, as well as parents, have a sense of digital competency, that the applications, the supports, the programs, whatever it is that you're using for instruction, making sure that they know how to navigate those different applications. The second thing I would say that makes your digital instruction different from face-to-face is that your communication with your parents needs to be more thorough. It needs to be streamlined as well as predictable. Establish a consistent location and predictable schedule for sharing information. Set clear expectations and boundaries for communication. Create a backup plan for off hours and tech support. Make communication multimodal. And lastly, and most importantly, provide your parents with tech training. Making sure that parents understand exactly how and where and when assignments are going to roll out, how they communicate with you, what's the best way to reach out to you and communicate. That gives them the opportunity, or rather it puts them in position to help their child as they are navigating during this time when you're with online teaching. The community and connections, they need to be a priority also for the teachers as well. Being an online teacher can be isolating. I mean, especially if you're either teaching from home or maybe in the case of several schools or districts have opted to have this online model for students, but teachers are still required to come to school and be at the physical setting. So it's important for those teachers to remain connected to the other online teachers, either in your content area, your subject area, grade level area. Always stay connected with those individuals who are doing what you are doing so that you can provide support, even to the extent of providing emotional support, checking on each other's well-being. Now, your instructional design. Primarily, teacher collaboration. Your teacher collaboration means that you are working more closely with specialists to make sure that your instruction materials are meeting the needs of all of your students. Partnering with others in your content area to plan instruction. Working together on cross-curricular projects and dividing up the things that all students need, like your technology, the instruction, among teachers on a team or grade level. Your main thing when you're collaborating with the other teachers is to make sure that your students are not doing the same lessons over and over and over, making sure that the work isn't being duplicated. Now, here's the other thing about your instructional design that is different with your online teaching versus face-to-face. Face-to-face time should be used for active learning. When you have your students face-to-face via Google Meet or Zoom or whatever it is that you are utilizing so that you can have time with your students, that face-to-face time should just be for active learning. Online instruction, of course, is made up largely of asynchronous instruction, which students can access basically at any time. Requiring attendance for synchronous instruction puts some of your students at an immediate disadvantage, especially if they don't have the same access to technology, reliable internet, or a flexible home schedule. Kind of think about it in these terms. Your students, they may have siblings. They have parents who may be working at home. They may have just a limited amount of devices that they can access at any given time. So when you're looking at asynchronous versus synchronous instruction, just make sure that when you do have them, that it's for active learning. Now, here's some things that you can do with your online instruction. Always make sure that you offer face-to-face or synchronous opportunities at some point. One way to make them happen more easily may be to have your students meet in small groups. It is nearly impossible to arrange for 30 students to attend a meeting at once. I know one of my colleagues, she is one of the teachers that has been assigned a block of students for online instruction. And on her roster, she has some 86, 87 students that are virtual. And the idea of her breaking these kids up over the course of a day or even over the course of a week will mean that she is spending a tremendous amount of time, in my opinion, looking into a computer screen and having attendance that may be a bit sporadic, just because a lot of her students, they struggle with the technology aspect. I mean, we provide them with Chromebooks that they can check out, but we didn't give them any internet. So there are no hotspots or anything like that that we could loan to them so that they can have reliable internet service. So we were just looking at Google Meet, and Google Meet will allow you to have up to 250 participants, which you're thinking that's got to be absurd, especially at a at a public school level, ninth grade level, surely not at a level where you are students that are a lot younger, like elementary age students. But you got to come up with some creative ways that you can meet with your students. Assigning four students to meet to, it may be a much more manageable way to do that. This arrangement allows your students to get to know each other if you do those smaller groups. 86 students is a lot of students to have in a Google Meet. 250 is just insane to me. But you want to give them this opportunity to get to know each other better, to establish some type of trust with you, as well as their peers in the classroom. Also keep in mind that students might be rearranged for other activities to provide some type of variety. So you're probably wondering, what kind of instructional activities should be used for these different formats? Well, what works best is to keep direct instruction, things like brief video lectures, readings, in an asynchronous form, using checks for understanding like embedded questions or exit slips, things of that nature. Will allow you to kind of manage that. Now, there is a plethora of strategies or small group strategies that you can employ. And I actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I could do a podcast that just focuses on those small group strategies. But just to kind of mention a few, of course, you have the jigsaw method, where students form expert groups on a particular chunk of content and they teach that content to other students. Of course, you've got discussion strategies that can be adapted for virtual settings, using best practices for cooperative learning, visible thinking routines, game storming, and other business-related protocols that are adapted for education, where students take on the role of customers, stakeholders, just a list of few. And I'm definitely, yes, I'm going to do a podcast that focuses on those small group strategies. Now, again, another way that your online teaching should be different from face-to-face instruction, your content needs to be simplified and slow down. Online instruction is not, again, conducive to covering large amounts of content. So you have to choose wisely, teaching the most important things at a slower pace. Instructions should be easy to find. They need to be explicit and, again, multimodal. They need to be in a lot of different places, just like your instructions, in several different places. I teach honors, a literature composition, and one thing that I did prior to our present situation of having this online teaching being a huge component of what we're doing now, before any of this, for years, I've always taken a multimodal approach. Didn't really call it that. I just knew that if I put materials and instructions in several different places, it eliminated the remark or the comment of, oh, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where the instructions were. I couldn't see the directions. Couldn't find them. Well, you want to make sure that they're not only in a lot of different places, but you can also maybe tailor them or maybe not tailor. Maybe you could draft them in such a way so that they give the same instruction, they provide the same direction, but they use different wordings. So because you are not in the same room with students, your instructions have to work a lot harder than they do in a brick and mortar setting. Provide instructions in a consistent location and at a consistent time. That's, again, going back to that predictability. Make instructions explicit. Offer multimodal instructions. For me, what I employ to make sure that I have instructions different places, different modes, different ways, I utilize Kinvolve with sending out instructions to both my students as well as the parents. I utilize the email feature in Google Classroom, emailing students, also emailing guardians. I still have parents who like Remind. And for those parents who still like to use Remind, I send out reminds. Then there is within the platform that I utilize, and I utilize Google Classroom extensively. I have instructions on the stream. They're embedded within the classwork tab under whatever category the assignment falls under, or if it's materials, if it's a question, whatever it is, I have it in different places. I try to be as multimodal as possible. So with that in mind, think about your grading practices. Well, traditional grading practices, they have to take a back seat to feedback. Again, and I think back to my colleague with the 86 students in her one class. Now, she has face-to-face classes, but one block of the day, she has all of the virtual students that are taking literature for this semester. So that's a tremendous amount of work that you would have to grade that is going to be different than what you're providing your students that are face-to-face. So when teaching remotely, put the emphasis on formative feedback. As students work through assignments and tasks, rather than simply grading them at the end, just focus on feedback. Most learning management platforms like Google Classroom, they have built-in features for giving feedback. Use these as your primary method. Tools like Floop offer other ways to provide on-the-spot feedback and can be especially good for math. You also want to provide a pathway for students and parents to give you feedback on assignments as well. Now, last big area that your online instruction is going to be different from face-to-face, summative assessment should focus on creation. Have students create things. Things like videos, podcasts, digital or physical art, writing pieces, comics, and so on. For assessment, use a detailed rubric that highlights the learning goals the end product would demonstrate. You can use a single point rubric. Help your students discover tools to work with. Maybe tools that are organized by product. For each thing that they actually create. When developing the assignment, rather than focusing on the end product, start by getting clear on what you want students to do with that product. Now, of course, there's some things that stay the same. Not everything in online teaching is different. Some aspects of good teaching should definitely stay the same. Like, of course, you need to have clear and consistent communication. Creating explicit, consistent rituals and routines. Continuing to use research-based instructional strategies. Always determining which is the better delivery. Do you need digital or does it need to be something that's non-digital with regards to tools for an assignment? The most important thing as you approach the idea of online teaching and trying to make sure that your students' needs are being met, do some research on your own. Look out there. There are YouTube videos. There are different that are now people that are coming to the forefront that I would say are people that you could actually go to that are great resources for different ideas of what you can employ, different tools that you can use with your students. But again, as always, if you have any questions specific for me, just know that all you have to do is send me a message. I will get back to you as soon as I can. And take care until our next podcast.